Hello, everyone. Yeah, I hear that we are having sound issues tonight. I could tell that with Lori right towards the end. Actually, I heard Lori well for a little bit, but then towards the end, when she was speaking to me, saying something about my trip to China and my daughter's college orientation and such, I couldn't quite make out what she was saying. I heard those words, but I'm not sure what she was saying about that because the mic was so in and out. So we shall see how this goes. What I'm here for is the seven steps to awakening. And then following the seven steps to awakening, the Awakening Together Satsang with Tony Samara. Now, the good news about the Satsang with Tony Samara is that it's pre-recorded. It's not live, so Pal Talk problems aren't going to cause a problem there. I can also post the audio, and if people can't hear it here, they can go listen to it on their own. So that's the good news. So I guess what I will do is I will just teach as if you can hear every word that I am saying. Of course, this is also being recorded, and this audio will also be posted later, so anyone who wants to hear all of it can do so. I was going to start with silence tonight instead of music, but because of how Pal Talk is in and out, maybe I should play a short little song, because if I play silence, you guys might think the mic is just not working if I do silence. So why don't I go back to what I usually do, and I will play a song. Here's a song called, oh gosh, there's two that look kind of interesting here, but I'm going to go with the one I saw first. The song is called Love of God, and it's by a lady named Julie True. And I'm going to use it just to be silent. The song's about a minute and 57 seconds long, so that's a good little opportunity to be silent. I see Lynn is asking, how long is the Tony interview? It went an hour and 15 minutes, and then he and I got cut off off of Skype. So I have an hour and 15 minutes of his interview. Okay. So how are you guys hearing me before I get started? Well, maybe let me play the song, and then I'll ask that after the song. All right? So let's play the song, and let's see how it goes. Maybe I'll do something else instead of teach if it's not real good. Maybe I'll just put off the teaching another week and I'll just sit and chat. We'll see how it goes. Let's play the song. This is Love of God by Julie True. It's our opportunity to be silent.
Choose life.
Yep. She chose life. And then that was the end of the song. I had my eyes closed and was being silent, so I wasn't paying that close of attention to the music, and it kind of surprised me when it stopped. All right, good. I'm glad that the sound is good right now, so maybe we'll just go ahead and do the teaching. So I'm here for the 7 steps to awakening, and I'm going to be starting with quote number 650, and I'm putting a link to my journal entry for number 650 in the room now. This is in step 3 of the 7 steps to awakening. And this is from the Supreme Yoga collection of quotes in step 3. And first let me read the quote from the book. Only the supreme truth exists. And the individual personality is absorbed in it. Only the supreme truth exists. And the individual personality is absorbed in it. I'm just going to go directly to my journal. There's nothing coming up for me to say in this moment. So I'm going to go directly to my journal and read from my journal. The journal says, the personality is nothing to be concerned about. The fact that it appears to be is not cause for concern. To resist the appearance of the personality is to give it more meaning than its due. Instead of giving an appearance meaning, simply return attention to ever-present reality. That's all that's needed. I have a vague memory. It's not a super strong memory, but I have a vague memory of a point on this spiritual path where I felt a bit guilty just for the personality. You know, just for Regina being Regina. You know, not necessarily right-minded or wrong-minded Regina, just Regina being Regina, you know, like goofing off in the kitchen with Danielle and Jasmine, or enjoying taking walks on a warm, sunny day. You know, or really loving to stretch out and go to sleep after a full day, you know, just loving that opportunity to close my eyes and go to sleep, or, you know, any of the things that that Regina loves, enjoys, appears to be. There used to be a guilt about this. I used to think that there was something wrong with the personality. And not wrong because the personality did bad things. Wrong just because the personality itself should not appear. That was really the thought. That because our truth is a oneness, the personality should not be here. Nothing unique and individual should appear to be. And I don't know exactly how that guilt died, but it did. And in fact, when it died, I came to see the personality as both meaningless and precious simultaneously. You know, like a flower is kind of meaningless and precious simultaneously. You know, I mean, like a flower doesn't have great meaning in your life. You know, you don't lay in bed at night worrying about the flower. You don't try and control the entire world, you know, for the flower so that the flower can get its way. You know, the flower doesn't have a lot of meaning for you. Yet there's great joy in seeing the flower and smelling the flower and being around the flower. So it's kind of funny. It's meaningless and precious at the same time. And that's how I came to see the personality, and not just the Regina personality, but I came to see all personalities that way. Kind of meaningless and precious at the same time, like flowers. so that I could enjoy them like flowers. And whatever idea that I once had that the personality was somehow wrong, that it shouldn't be here, that there shouldn't be any uniqueness, well, that just died. And in fact, it died so well that it doesn't even make sense to me. I mean, would I say there shouldn't be different color flowers? Would I say there shouldn't be different kinds of trees or different kinds of fish or, you know, different weather days, you know, some rainy days, some sunshiny days? Of course not. So why should I have any feeling of guilt around the personality? But we certainly can make mistakes around the personality, even though the personality is meaningless and precious. We can make mistakes around it. And it's okay to be aware of those mistakes and watching those mistakes with awareness so that they can fade and die. You know, like we can make the mistake of taking this personality or another personality that's close to us in our life too seriously, and therefore trying to control events in order to make sure that the personality gets what it wants. We can judge the personality. We can judge the personality as stupid or as talking too much or not being social enough, outgoing enough. You know, I'm sure the list goes on. I just don't feel to bother my brain with all the different ways we could judge our personalities, but I know you guys get it. So I suppose that, you know, if each of us is really serious about this awakening process, that one thing we could do is kind of look at our own relationship with our personality and the other personalities that are a part of our life. And we could start noticing where any part of our relationship with personality is unwholesome. You know, too much attachment, too much judgment, something like that. Too much wish that the personality was different. And start bringing that into our awareness and just noticing it and realizing it doesn't have to be that way until it dies. And we can allow personalities to be as meaningless and as precious as the flowers. So let me read what my journal says again. Well, first of all, I'll read the quote again, quote 650. Only the supreme truth exists, and the individual personality is absorbed in it. So with that said, there is one more thing I want to say. I do love flowers. Sometimes when I'm walking my dog, I love the flowers so much, so I take a picture of them, just like we might take a picture of a personality that we really love, like my daughter. Sometimes we would take selfies, right? Because that personality is precious too. So I do, you know, I do love flowers. I take pictures of them and I stop and I admire them and I spend a little bit of time being with them. But I also have a healthy recognition that that flower is temporary. You know, depending on the type of flower it is, it could be extremely temporary. Like there was a flower in Santa Barbara on a cactus that only blooms once a year for 24 hours, very, very temporary. Some of the flowers that I have in my yard, I don't know exactly how, but they come into bloom in spring and they stay in bloom until late fall, until just about time for the first frost. They're there all year, but it's still temporary. And, you know, I have an understanding that flowers are temporary, and I don't lament that. I don't look outside one morning and notice the flower is dying and go, oh, no, I love that flower so much. How am I going to get by without that flower? And I think that when we become focused on reality as the truth, not only my truth, but the truth of everyone around me, I think there's also less sadness with the death of the personalities. I think that we can let them go too, just like we can let the flowers go, because we're focused on the reality, the truth, the life, the isness that always is and that does not end. So again, the quote number 650 says, only the Supreme Truth exists, and the individual personality is absorbed in it. And the journal entry says, the personality is nothing to be concerned about. The fact that it appears is not cause for concern. To resist the appearance of the personality is to give it more meaning than it's due. Can you imagine? Can you imagine taking the walk along the river and saying, and when you see the beautiful yellow flowers and the pink flowers and all the different flowers that are growing along the river, you say, oh, that flower shouldn't be. That's a sign of separateness. Oh my gosh, there's a different kind of flower. That's a sign of separateness. There's something wrong here. That flower should not be. I mean, that's ridiculous, right? That's ridiculous to resist the variety of flowers because, you know, they indicate separateness. It's just silly. Same thing with the trees. I don't know how many different kinds of trees there are along the river. You know, to have some kind of judgment about the difference in trees, or let's just put the plants together. Why do we have flowers and trees and grass and bushes and cactuses? You know, it's a sign of separation. Let's resist that. It's silliness. So why would we resist the appearance of bodies and the appearance of personalities? You know, separation doesn't live in the appearance. Separation lives in the mind. Separation doesn't live in the appearance. Separation lives in the mind. And if we become focused on the I am presence, the isness, the life, the awareness that all things are, somehow that kind of comes into the foreground, even though we still see the individuality of bodies and personalities and flowers and trees. That which is constant, that which unites all things and makes all things the same, comes forward. And somehow we become more aware of the reality, and this enables to enjoy the apparent variety. So again, the journal says, the personality is nothing to be concerned about. The fact that it appears to be is not cause for concern. To resist the appearance of the personality is to give it more meaning than it's due. Instead of giving an appearance meaning, simply return attention to ever-present reality. That is all that's needed. So again, return our attention to isness, life, awareness, presence, being. And as we focus on that, we become more aware of that. We come to see that as the reality of all of this apparent variety. And then we can enjoy the variety without losing sight of the reality. And with that said, I am going to move on to number 651. I will start by reading 651 in the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening. This notion of the I cannot be got rid of except through self-knowledge. And of course, that's the capital S self. We could call it the knowledge of reality. This notion of the I cannot be got rid of except through self-knowledge. And again, I'm feeling to go directly to the journal, so I'll read what the journal says at number 651. By continually noticing the changeless, one realizes this changing self is not what I am. By continually noticing the changeless, one realizes this changing self is not what I am. I am not self-realized, meaning I don't have this strong awareness or identity with that which is beyond everything. You know, I just don't. That is something that I am still practicing towards. And yet at the same time, there are shifts that have occurred. There are changes that have occurred. And to say that I believe I am Regina, like once upon a time I believed I was Regina, that's not true either. I'm somewhere in the middle. Although the personality still appears, there are some parts of the personality that's disappeared. And those parts of the personality are parts that I would call purely egoic. For example, you know, wanting my daughter and my boyfriend to behave a certain way. And if they didn't act the way I wanted them to act, getting upset. You know, that kind of stuff just doesn't happen anymore. I'm able to be with whatever it is. I'm able to be happy. I know happiness as, as what I am. I started to say happiness is within, but that's not even true. Happiness is just what I am. I can't find a separation between happiness and what I am. So I'll just word it that way. It doesn't seem to matter whether I'm working or whether I'm playing. There's this constancy that's always there. This current moment always has a sense of reality about it, no matter where I am or what I'm doing. And all other moments that are just remembered or dreamed of, they don't have a sense of reality. All these things I'm describing to you once upon a time was not my experience. That is my experience now. So it shows that some kind of a shift is happening. Because this shift is still happening, it seems to me that the best thing that I can do is continue to practice and even increase the practices that have brought me this far. Just keep right on doing what I've been doing that has brought me this far. And one of those practices started around, I'm going to guess, 2010. So it's been about 5 years. And that's the practice of, I call it checking in. Checking in to notice what is constant, what is always here, what is not changing. And I think this is a big reason why my experience is ceasing to change. No matter where I'm at, like I said, whether I'm at work or on vacation, no matter what I'm doing, no matter what's happening around me, there's this real strong happiness experience. It's just always there. Like we were in China recently, and one of the things we did in China was we climbed they called it a wild part of the Great Wall. Wild because it's not taken care of anymore. Tourists don't go there. Things are growing over it. You know, it's a wild part of the Great Wall. And it goes over this pretty tall mountain called Crouching Tiger. A very famous mountain, actually. Some of you may have heard of it, Crouching Tiger Mountain. And we went there and we decided to hike the Great Wall to the top of Crouching Tiger Mountain. This was a very steep, fairly long, 2 hours of very steep, so that's fairly long. We just went up, 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 up at a steep pace for 2 hours. That's, at least to me, that felt long. maybe some people are in shape enough it wouldn't have, but it felt like a long time to be going up, 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 up at a steep pace. And it was hot. It was very, very hot. And, you know, I think probably the first 45 minutes or so, I was able to just keep up a constant pace of walking. But after about 45 minutes, I'd have to walk a little bit and then stop and, you know, just kind of breathe and, you know, it felt like gather my energy because it was like using up so much energy being so hot and so steep. And then I would feel like I had my energy and I would hike some more. And even the last little bit, when I only had like 6 feet to go. You know, again, this was 6 feet of very, very upward, very steep, very upward. And like that last 6 feet, I was like, come on, you can do it. It's only six more feet, but I was having to stop and gather my energy. You know, it was very tough. But the reason I'm telling you this is what I noticed was how happy I was. You know, I was so, so happy. Yeah, similar to Masada in Israel, but longer and steeper. But maybe not quite as hot. I think Masada was 112 when we finished. This was probably closer to, 92 or so. So not as hot. But, but that was, when we finished that, we were glad to finish, weren't we, Barb? We were glad we did not have to take another step. And that's the way I felt when I got to the top of the Crouching Tiger. I did not want to take another step. So like it takes everything in you. But my point is that I was really happy. And Jasmine at one point wasn't happy. At one point she got very grumpy and she was talking about how she hated the tour guide and hated the day and blah, 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 blah. And, and Barb is saying she did not hike up Masada happily. Yeah. Jasmine did not hike up the Great Wall happily. But as I was watching Jasmine, I knew for a fact that at one time I would have felt exactly like her, you know, because it really was hard. And it really was hot, and there was a time when my grumpiness would have come, and it just didn't. And to me, that's amazing, you know, that this gentle happiness that I have is always present. And again, it doesn't matter what I'm dealing with in the moment; it's always present. And again, I really feel this gentle happiness that has revealed itself has come about because I have spent so much time since 2010 when I discovered the practice focusing on that which doesn't change, focusing on the constant. And when it first started, my temperament, I'll call it, was not even. What I would do is as my temperament changed, you know, like let's say I was getting too hot or too cold and therefore I was getting grumpy, what I would do is I would pause in the act of that grumpiness and I would check for that which was here now that was also here when I was happy. Or if I was getting really, really sleepy, really tired, I would stop and I would check for that which is here now that was not here when I was very awake, not so sleepy and tired. If I was feeling sick, if I had a headache, I would check for that which is here now, which is also here when I felt completely healthy. And this practice of checking for the constant, the consistent, all I can say is it's done something. In fact, some of you guys know in March I fell off a horse and I really hurt. The body hurt, no doubt about it. It hurt really bad. But what's funny is when I fell off the horse and I felt all of that pain, it happened naturally. The first real memory I have was checking that which was constant. It's just like the first thing I did. It was just automatic, checking that which was constant and noticing that there was no change in it. And I think you also know that when I fell off that horse and I experienced that great pain, no grumpiness occurred. No grumpiness occurred. Happiness. Happiness was unchanged even in the surprise of falling off, the pain, and, you know, in the days of pain that followed. No change in the happiness. And again, the only connection I can make is that it had something to do with always checking for what was constant. always checking for what was here, noticing that it did not change even as I, the personality, appeared to change. So it's a practice I would recommend just based on the results that I've experienced. And in fact, it's so easy because you can do it anytime, anywhere, no matter who you're with, and no one even knows you're doing it, right? You don't have to close your eyes or anything. But that's one way to do it, by the way. You can have your eyes open and check for that which is constant. Close your eyes. Now everything seems to have, you know, gone away from your vision. And check that which is constant. Go ahead, plug your ears. The sound goes away. Check that which is constant. It's still there. It's a lot. I find it fun and helpful. So again, 6:51 in the journal is what got me started on that little tirade. By continually noticing the changeless, one realizes this changing self is not what I am. I noticed a moment ago I described myself as, you know, I am happiness. Well, that's much different than I am this personality, because this personality does, you know, can, not that she does right now, but you can get grumpy, right? Or angry or hate. But when I see myself as the happiness, that doesn't happen so much. So that's all I'm going to say about that. I'm going to move on to number 652. In the Seven Steps to Awakening says, oh, Barb says, I see, I just now looked again. Barb did not hike Masada. She took the transport up. There was a cable car, so she took the cable car. I thought you did hike with us, but I guess I'm just remembering wrong. Some of us hiked and some people took the cable car. But everyone who hiked was happy when the hike ended, yeah. All right, 652. Pursuing the inquiry into its real nature, the mind abandons its identification, even with the body. Again, number 652. Pursuing the inquiry into its real nature, the mind abandons its identification, even with the body. Maybe, and I want to put a great big fat maybe in front of this because I don't know and I don't want to pretend like I do, but maybe that's the in-between state that I'm at. I mentioned to you before that, you know, I'm not self-realized. I don't identify with that which is beyond everything. I don't. But yet I'm not identified with the personality and the body like I used to be. I said I'm in some kind of a middle space. And maybe this is the middle space. What hasn't happened yet is disidentification with the mind totally. Certainly there are thoughts the mind can think that that I'm disidentified with, but most certainly there are thoughts the mind can think that I am identified with. Most of them, I'm sure. The way the mind thinks has changed. It doesn't think the types of thoughts it used to think, but it still thinks and I still listen. You know, it's more of a purified mind now, but it's still a mind and I still listen. So maybe this is really the middle space that I'm in. I am still identified with the mind. The mind is more of a purified mind, and the mind itself is not as identified with the body and the personality, right? What's that word there? The mind becomes declutched. I've never heard that word before, but I like it. Yeah, so maybe that's the middle space I'm in. You see, I'm not self-realized with that which is beyond everything because there's still an identification with the mind. But the mind is in some kind of a process where a lot of purification has happened, and the mind itself is realizing, I am not the body. I am not the personality. Maybe that's the middle place I'm at. That feels pretty right, but I'm not gonna say that I know for sure because that feels foolish. But that might be it. Maybe my mind has become declutched, as Lynn has said. And that's why I'm where I'm at right now. And that's why I also need to continue the spiritual practice. Because it is not my goal to achieve a state of mind, right? It is my goal to go beyond mind entirely to truth. However, I'm not going to complain about this state of mind, because this state of mind is much more favorable to experience than the state of mind I once experienced. And I also think this state of mind is probably much more helpful to the steps I need to take now to awaken than my mind once was, when it was very unpurified, full of grievances, full of hatred, full of self-hatred, full of worries and concerns, right? I think it's really helpful that I don't have that kind of a mind anymore. So I'm really grateful for where I'm at, but maybe I haven't de-identified with the mind really hardly at all. I've identified with certain types of thinking, and that's great, you know, but as far as de-identifying with the mind, maybe that hasn't happened at all yet. You know, in Hinduism, they talk about three, I don't know if they would call them states of mind. I'm going to call them states of mind because I don't know what else to call them. They talk about three states of mind. The first one is tamasic. And the tamasic person, you know, might have a lot of alcohol problems, may have problems being honest, may have problems being committed, may have problems keeping a job, may have problems making money, you know, that kind of thing. And then there's the rajasic person. The rajasic person could be very ambitious in the world, could have lots of goals and working very carefully to achieving those goals, may appear a lot happier than the tamasic person, but also, you know, maybe has a lot of stress. And then there's the sattvic person. And the sattvic person is the one that seems to have the purified mind. This person can exhibit, they call it an evenness or equanimity, but you know, that gentle happiness that I was talking about, no matter what's happening, you know, whether there's a problem right now or not a problem right now, the state of mind, the equanimity can be the same. This person can, you know, spend time maybe in meditation, contemplation. This time, this person can be very generous with their own time and resources in order to help others. But one thing that's really important is whether the person seems to have a tamasic state of mind, a rajasic state of mind, or a sattvic state of mind, they're all still attached to mind. So in that way, they're equally illusory. So maybe this is just describing my experience. Maybe I have moved from a fairly rajasic, obviously there were some habits that were tamasic, but a fairly rajasic personality, if we were going to categorize it in one space, to sattvic. And so I'm experiencing those qualities now, but the attachment to mind is still there. And I think that a mistake that can maybe happen at this phase, if people aren't alert and paying attention, just because of the comparison of how different experience is to how it used to be when the personality was more tamasic or more rajasic, a person may start to believe little subtle lies like, you know, I am enlightened. Those kinds of things, you know, the mind is speaking, I am enlightened, and because, you know, one is still attached to the mind, one believes that thought. You know, you could say, also I think another thing that could happen is that a person could actually fall down on the job, and by that I mean slow or stop the spiritual practice, because at one time maybe the motivator for spiritual practice was to get out of suffering. And now that the suffering is not there, the motivation has fallen away. And so the person might just stay in a sattvic state of mind for the rest of this lifetime. Who knows, maybe many lifetimes. I don't know how it works. But because the motivation to awaken has died, and now there's just this gentle happiness, and without the realization that this is still an attachment to mind, it's really not what the goal was or what the original purpose was, and one could lose their motivation. So I think it's okay to look at all of this stuff, and I think it's okay to check with the heart, to ask, what do I truly want? In my case, it is not to rest on my laurels, as they say, with a happy sattvic state of mind. In fact, I would suspect, I don't know this for a fact, but I would suspect that if one did choose to rest on their laurels with a happy sattvic state of mind and cease the practice that got them here, that happy sattvic state of mind might even begin to slip a little bit. The ego might start coming back. So when I check with my heart, I don't find anything in me that wants to stop spiritual practice at all. In fact, I have just as much motivation to become even more motivated for spiritual practice than I've been up to this point. You know, and continue to increase that motivation, continue to increase that desire for truth, that desire for awakening, right? That intense desire for liberation. So number 652 in the journal said, the mind is an illusion held up by belief and attachment to illusion. Notice it doesn't just say the unpurified mind, right? The mind, period, is an illusion held up by belief and attachment to illusion. This is how inquiry and self-watching help. By continually turning attention from that which is false to that which is real, the difference or contrast is noticed. Belief in the false and attachment to what isn't real weakens. Love of true self draws one to itself. Then the false is no more. The idea of it is absorbed into reality, which is all-encompassing. So what I hear when I read this, you all have heard us talk about awareness, watching awareness as a type of meditation. And we've talked about before that when you're practicing awareness, watching awareness, you're taking your attention and you're placing it on that which is constant, I'll call it right now. And you're leaving it with that which is constant. You're really spending a lot of time focusing on that which is constant instead of focusing on the changing outer world, including changing thoughts. And what this seems to be saying is that if you will turn your attention to that which is constant, that which is real, and leave your attention there, or every time you notice it's shifted to the changing again, bring it back to that which is constant. What happens is the love of that which is constant somehow draws you to it. And those words are very dual, but I don't know how else to say it. Draws you into it. And when you are absorbed into it or awakened to it, some people would say when the false personality dies in it, right, then we have what we call awakening. Now, 652 in the Seven Steps to Awakening said, pursuing the inquiry into its real nature, the mind abandons its identification even with the body. And so what I am doing right now is I am saying that inquiry, this type of inquiry that is being talked about here, it's often called self-inquiry, who am I or what am I? But it's a constant checking for that which is constant, that which is changeless, that which is always here. It's a constant noticing that that is what I am. It has to be, because that's what's always here. Moods come and go. Thoughts come and go. Pain and health come and go. Young and old come and go. You know, at one point this body was younger, now this body is older. That all changes. But this, which is constant, is always here. I'm calling that inquiry, that checking in, that looking. And in meditation, it would be a process of spending, I'll say, as much time as possible being very, very focused on that which is constant, that which is always here, that which is changeless. That which was the same when I was 5 as it is now when I'm about to turn 55. The journal says, the mind is an illusion held up by belief and attachment to illusion. That would be the changing. The more I put my attention on the changing, the more attached I am to the mind. And again, even thoughts are the changing. So the more I'm listening to my thoughts, even if they're purified, nicer thoughts than they once were, they're still changing. That quality of changing hasn't stopped. And so if I'm caught up in my more purified, nicer thoughts, I'm not focused on the changeless. The mind is an illusion held up by belief and attachment to illusion. This is how inquiry and self-watching help. By continually turning attention from that which is false, the changing, to that which is real, the changeless, the constant. The difference is noticed, the contrast between the constant changing of thought, moods, emotions, experiences, and this changelessness that's always, always, always here, that becomes noticed. As a result, the belief in the false and attachment to what isn't real weakens. The mind even comes to see the difference, the contrast. And then the love of self, the love of that which is constant, the love of that which is changeless, like a magnet. Ramana Maharshi used to talk about the heart as a magnet. Draws one to itself. The love of self draws one to itself. The personality or the fault dies in the sea of truth, is totally absorbed into the light of truth, awakening to that which I am occurs. That which is beyond the mind, then the fault is no more. Even the idea of it is absorbed into reality, which is all-encompassing. And think about it. All that we really needed to do in order for that to happen is to be more interested in that which is changeless, that which is always here, that which is constant, that which is really more intimately me than any thought, any personality, anybody. I just have to be more interested in that than the constant changing mind and the constant changing body and the constant changing world. I'm going to move on to number 653. 653 in the Seven Steps to Awakening says, when the mind gets involved in the external objective universe, it moves away from the self. Well, this is really the same teaching, just kind of pointing in the other direction, right? If I do get caught up in my thinking, even my purified thinking, just thinking about what needs to be done and how I'm going to get it done. It's not grievances and hate and all that anymore, but it can still think about what needs to be done and how I'm going to get it done, right? If I get caught up in my thinking, then I am distracted from the changeless, which really means I'm moving away from the self. I've lost interest in the self, and I'm naturally moving away from the self. It's really just the same teaching presented again in another way. When the mind gets involved in the external objective universe, it moves away from the self. And this is why the teachings of Inner Ramana came, remember? The teachings of Inner Ramana came with practices to help us keep from being involved in the external objective universe by giving attention to thinking about it. Remember, instead of thinking about what needs to be done and how I'm going to get it done, we're to surrender and just ask, what am I to do now? And the feeling, the prompt comes and we just do it. We don't worry about what needs to be done in the future. When the time comes to do it, that's when the prompt will come to do it, and that's when we'll know how to do it, right? So surrender is to help eliminate that outward-focused attention on thinking. Also, the mantra, I am that I am. You know, there's a lot of just daydreaming that happens. It can be harmless daydreaming. It doesn't even have to be grievance-based daydreaming. Just daydreaming about yesterday, remembering some conversation yesterday, even purely without judgment. Or daydreaming about tomorrow, the future, some conversation that might happen tomorrow, even purely without, you know, grievance. Yet all of that is still attachment to mind. I call it, it's like keeping the battery of the ego plugged in and charged. And so the mantra, I am that I am, gives us something to focus on, you know, just while we're doing dishes, driving the car, because you're right, you can do it with eyes open or eyes closed. Just so we don't get caught up in that daydreaming and in that charging the battery of the ego. Right, the tools and the teachings of Inner Ramana are designed to help us break the habit of being involved in the external universe mentally. Our attention focused on our thoughts about the external universe is to help break that habit. When the mind gets involved in the external objective universe, it moves away from the self. You see, that's not helpful. And so whether we use the tools of the teachings of Inner Ramana, or whether we're able to set in awareness, watching awareness 12 hours a day, or whether there's something else that we are using, constant self-inquiry, something else that we're using, it is helpful to allow ourselves to be guided to a tool that's going to keep our attention focused towards that which is constant instead of allowing our attention to drift to our thoughts. And again, it doesn't matter how nice or how pure those thoughts are. When the mind gets involved in the external objective universe, it moves away from the self. Okay, let's have a peek at the journal. Just as the false is weakened when attention is turned toward changeless awareness, the false is strengthened when attention goes toward body, mind, personality, and towards the world. This is where knowledge of math is helpful to awakening. That's right, I said math. How much time per day is spent focusing on reality? And how much time is spent focusing on the personality self and the world? Shift the balance towards reality. all time spent on reality, meaning focusing on that which is changeless. All time spent on reality deprives illusion of a fighting chance. And that's because illusion needs your attention to survive. And so if you are not giving it your attention, you are depriving it of a fighting chance. Let me read the journal entry again. Just as the false is weakened when attention is turned toward changeless awareness, the false is strengthened when attention goes toward body, mind, personality, and towards the world. This is where knowledge of math is helpful to awakening. How much time per day is spent focusing on reality, and how much time is spent focusing on self and world? Shift the balance toward reality. All time spent on reality deprives illusion of a fighting chance. So, interesting question. How much time per day is spent focusing on reality, and how much time is spent focusing on self and world? Self meaning, of course, the personality self in this case. You know, we can each look at that and we can answer that question for ourselves. Probably every one of us will find there is room for improvement here. And then we need to ask, do I have the motivation to take this opportunity and shift more time towards focusing on reality? And what tools are arising in me to help me do that? You know, is it more time in meditation? Is it adding the practices from the teachings of Inner Ramana to my daily active life? You know, Michael Langford also has the loving all method. Today I was reading a method of just focusing on life all of the time while you're working, you know, while you're playing, while you're doing everything. Just keep focusing on life. And we know that Nisargadatta Maharaj focused on the I am presence. In a way, I think all these things are kind of saying the same thing. They're all turning our attention the same way. But sometimes one flavor of this practice connects more with one person than another. So what tools are arising to help you, regardless of what your life is like, regardless of how much work you have to do every day or what family obligations you have or don't have, what is arising in you to help you shift that balance so that more time is being spent focused on that which is changeless, focused on reality, focused on awareness, focused on life, focused on isness, focused on the I am presence, than is currently happening? How can we improve our practice? And with that said, I'm going to let go of the mic. I'm going to just step away for a little bit. I need to save this recording and open up the recording of Tony Samara. So, Lynn, if you could play just a short song, maybe 3 minutes or so. By the time that song is done, I should be ready to go. So, releasing the mic.